Welcome to Live Daf, your online Daf Yomi Shir.
Shalom Aleichem and welcome back to today's Daf Hayomi. Avodah Zarah Ayin Hey, we begin on Ayin Dalad Amud Beis. It's four lines off the bottom. We learned yesterday about a cleansing process applied to non-kosher equipment. For instance, a gas, a wine press, which was tainted by non-kosher wine. The process used to cleanse it is called niguv. Rashi in the Mishnah explained. It's a proper cleansing, proper clean using water with some sort of caustic agent. Rashi actually referred to afer, ashes, as we're going to see in the Gemara now. And that serves to extract the embedded non-kosher residue within the equipment. So in fact, how do we go about doing this? What material is used? What type of detergent is meant to be employed? Bameh menagvan, what material is used to do niguv? Rava amar b'mayim, simply water. Rava bar bachana amar, no, be'efer. You need efer ashes. Asks the Gemara, Rav, who says water, just water, what kind of cleaning job is that? Rav amar b'mayim. He meant b'mayim with merely water, v'loy be'efer with nothing else, no detergent. And likewise, when Rabba Bar Bar Chana says amar be'efer, use ashes, just plain ashes. How could you do anything with just dry be'efer without water, v'loy b'mayim? Answers the Gemara, no, they both meant water and ashes. Ella. When Rav said Rav amar b'mayim, certainly he meant the water has to be initially placed and then followed with ashes. Vodin le'efer. Likewise, when Rav Bar Chana said ashes amar be'efer, certainly water has to be accompany as well. Vodin le'mayim. Le'plid. There's no difference between the two. There's no machlekes. They were referring to different circumstances. Habiratibta, habiyabesht. When Rav spoke about water, he meant water followed by efer. Because he was speaking about yabeshta, dry equipment. First you have to wet it, and then you can add the detergent, and of course you're going to, you know, rinse it afterwards to clean it properly. But the starting point is, the order is water followed by ashes. Rabbi Bar Chana, however, was speaking about beritivta, equipment which had, you know, residue in it. Rashi says, Yeshbo lachluchis yain, it already has some, it's wet. So the starting point here is to first absorb it, extract it with the afer, and then you follow with water for the final rinse. Okay, so all agree that you can't clean without water accompanied with some sort of detergent agent. You need the afer, you need the ashes. But in terms of a sequence, it all depends. If it's dry, you have to first wet it, and then put the afer on it, and then rinse it. If it's wet, you start with the afer, follow with the mayim. Itmar, we have learned, be'rav. So the Talmidim in the yeshiva of Rav, quoted Rav, Mishmei de Rav Amri, they described the cleansing process as follows. They said, how many steps are involved? Tarti, sometimes only two steps. So if it's already wet to begin with, so you do the afer and then the mayim. Talas, sometimes you need three steps. Let's say it's dry to begin with. You have to start water, and then move on to afer, and then followed with a final rinse of water. So sometimes it's two steps. Sometimes it involves three steps, depending on the circumstance. Shmuel Amar, Talas Arba'i. Shmuel, however, holds that sometimes it's three, sometimes it's four. Why? Explains Rashi. According to Shmuel, we need a double dose of afer. So it's going to be afer, rinsed, and then afer again to do a really thorough cleaning. So sometimes it's going to be three steps. So if it starts off wet, you start with the afer to absorb, followed by water, followed by afer. Sometimes it's arba, four steps. If it's dry to begin with, you have to start by wetting it with water. Afer, water and afer. Now Rashi points out that although you need a final rinse, you know, at the end to just wash it away, but we're not really, mentioning that on the list. Well, that's it's just to clean off the, to rinse it away. It's not meant as part of the extraction process. Besura masnuhach. In the yeshiva of Sura, they presented the machlekes the way we just did. That according to Rav, it's one step less than Shmuel. We only need one afer, whereas according to Shmuel, double afer. Bipubadis, however, in the other yeshiva, Masnu, had a different version of this discussion, which turned out to be no machlekes at all. So by Rav Amram Mishmei de Rav, it was quoted from Rav as Tlas Arboy 3 or 4, depending if it's dry or wet. Shmuel Amar Arboy Chamish. It can be 4, as much as 5 steps required in this procedure. But really, there's no machlekes. Both Rav and Shmuel, according to this version, require Afer to be applied twice. So how could we get to the number 4 or 5 according to Shmuel? Lipid, there's no machlekes between Rav and Shmuel. Marka Choshev Maya Basroi. The reason why Shmuel added another step is because he counted the last water as well, the last rinse, he put it into the sequence. That's how he gets to 4 or 5. Rav omitted the last rinse. It's not really part of the koshering process. It's just a more of a hygiene type of step. So he's always one step, one number less than Shmuel. But in reality, there is no machlekes in terms of what's required to kasha the equipment. Right? So according to Bamadisa, Rav gives us the number 3 or 4. So if it would be wet to begin with, you do afer, mayim, and afer. And we don't mention the last mayim, which is obvious. If the equipment was dry at the time, you have to start with wetting it, moistening it, water, afer, water, afer. And of course, we don't mention the last mayim. Shmuel takes it up one more number because he adds the last rinse onto his total. Bo minei mirabi avo. The following question was asked Rabbi Avo. Hani gurgi or gurni darmai. But darmai means goyim, equipment used by goyim for non-kosher wine, non-kosher material. And gurgi or gurni explains Rashi. Akalim. That's like a netting. So in the wine press, they would pile the grapes initially to the middle of it, make a little pile, and they would drop the big beam on it for the crush in order to contain those grapes, lest they get scattered and disperse while they're being crushed. You have to sort of keep them in place with this netting. So that's the gurney, some sort of like an overturned basket, like a netting to keep it in place. For use for non-kosher, a non-kosher run, my. What's the process required to get it kosher? Amar lehu Rabbi Avo. He responded with a brisa. Taniso, we learned it in a brisa. A brisa which actually is talking about tumah v'tahara issues. So it's not talking about non-kosher, but it's talking about equipment which was used for kosher wine, but they were tamei. It was being supervised by an Amah Aretz, who's not known to adhere to the halachas of Tumah. So we have, presumably, Tame juice material embedded in this equipment. Haresha Yogitav, Ubeis Badav, he has his wine presses, his olive presses, Tamein, which are Tame and absorbed with that type of material. Ubikesh, La Soysim at Tahara. Now he'd like to make a switch to use them for Tahara. How do we cleanse? How do we extract the problematic material from the equipment? Let's go through various pieces of equipment used in a wine press. Hadapin, the boards used to cover the grapes. Vadashin, Rashi says, that's the actual gas that we speak about all the time. This like sort of a piece of equipment which looks like a bath, like a pool. Ubeis badav, valulavin. These are the lulavin. These like they used to make brooms out of lulavin, so it's some sort of a broom. So all these, madichan, All they require is a good rinse, and you're good to go. It's interesting that Rashi points out that this seems to be the final word. You don't need Efer, in contrast to the previous sugya, which required Efer to be added. Just a good rinse, a good power wash is okay. Okay, what else do we have? We have Va'akalin. Oh, that's the item we're looking for. That's the netting. Shel Nitzaren. So it all depends what it's made of. It's made of Nitzaren, which are these branches. So it's wood material. Or Vishel. Vishel Batsputz. Some sort of a canvas. It's a type of, it's from the linen family. So all these need a more thorough cleaning. Menagvan. Oh, here we need to do niguv, which is the water / ashes treatment plan. Shal shifa, shal gemi. These are more absorbent materials. So if they're made of either shifa or gemi, miyashnan. In this case, you can't just rinse or wash. You have to age them. Let them dry up and evaporate. Meyashnon shnemasar chodesh, to leave them around for 12 months so that they totally dry up through and through. According to the Nakama, 12 months is required. Rav Shimon Gamliel Omer, he provides a different number, a different share of time. Manichon megas legas. So you leave them idle from this wine press season until the next season, which is roughly a year away. By that time, they'll have dried up. Mibad labad, in a case of a oil press, you leave them until the next season. Well, hamatana kam, isn't that exactly a 12 months like the first shita? What's the machlekes? Says the Gemara, but now there's a slight difference. Tanakama works with a set 12 month wait period, whereas according to Rav Shimon Gamliel, it's about seasons. Now, sometimes it's 12 months. Sometimes you have churfi. The next year's crop came ready early, so they're up and running only 10 months down the road. Va'afli, or got delayed, late season. So in that case, you have to wait until the season actually takes place. So it's a different type of time frame. Chachamim required you to wait until the next season, irrespective of whether it's 12 months, 10 months, or 12 or 14 months. That's the rule of thumb. So it's roughly a year, but it's not exactly. And it's sometimes makes it easier, sometimes harder. But the point is, by that time, we assume it's been dried up, ready to go. Rabbi Yisrael, her oritzel taron miyad. Suppose it's only 12 months. He needs the equipment right away. Any way to cleanse it right away? Yeah, magilim b'roischen. Dip it into boiling water. Oichotun mezesim, or pour on them boiling water used to cook up the olives. So it's hot water. That's like a gala, right? And that takes care of any issues. Rabbi Shimon Leil Mishon Beis Yomer. He says, there's another way to solve this instantly. Manichan tachas tzinor, shemem of mekalchen. Place the equipment under a running pipe. Obe mayon, shemem of roifen, or in a stream with running, gushing water. For how long? Mekama, how long is it left there? Oina. Oina is either a day, a 12-hour period. Kederosh amr b'yaynes. So the same system that's applied with respect to kashering this equipment when there's a yayin nesach issue, kach amr b'taharis, likewise the same method would apply to make it tahar from tumah. Asks the Gemara, well this brisa just quoted actually speaks about taharis, so if anything you should be saying it the other way, that this same system, all these methods that were working for taharis would work the same for yayin nesach. Clap your light, which direction are you going? But taharis coming, we're speaking about taharis. Ella, rather, the correct way to say it is, kederach shamar taharis, the same system employed for taharis as per this brisa. Kach Amar B'Yayin Nesach would apply to Yayin Nesach as well. The same exact formula, same exact system. Now you leave it in the running water for how long? An oina. How long is an oina? Kama oina. Amar b'chia, ba'aba, amar b'yechnan. Oya, my laila. Either a full day or a night. So it's a 12-hour period. Rav Chana Sheina, that was his name. Ba'amila, some say he was called Rav Chana Bar Sheina. He quotes, amar rab, b'chana, amar b'yechnan. No, it's not a day or a night. It's a half a day and half a night. So is there any machlokes between this and the previous quote? Av Rabbi Yochanan? Amar Shmuel Ritzel, there's no machlokes. Depends what part of the year we're standing at. How about Kuvas Nisan and Tishrei? When it's during Nisan and Tishrei, where it's, you know, at the equinox period, so it's even, day and night are even, 12 hours apiece, then you can say either day or night. How about Kuvas Tamas v'Tamis? The second version related to the other parts of the year. Tamas and Tevis, when it's a lopsided proportion. Day can be 16 hours, night can be 8 hours, right? So it's unsafe to say a day or a night. Because it's not reflective of a standard 12-hour period. Rather, in that case, you go with the Chatzi Yom Chatzi Laila formula. So it's 12 to 12, right? 12 p.m. to 12 a.m. or vice versa. And you know you covered exactly 12 hours. Amar Bida, Hani Ravki. Rashi learns Ravki is the Meshameris, like some sort of sieve, used to filter, the wine. Dharma of the guy, used for Yayin Nesach. How do you cleanse them? The Mazya, depends what it's made of. The Mazya made of hair, which isn't very absorbent. Madichan, just give them a nice rinse. The Amar made of wool, which is more absorbent. Menagwan, you have to do Nigob with the ashes. The Kisna made of flax, which is even more absorbent. Miyashin, you have to age it, let it dry for 12 months. Vika Kitri. Now, if you notice some knots there, surely you have to untie them before you clean it in order to get inside and extract everything. Hani Dekuli, V'chalasa. These are different types of baskets used for filtering wine. The Armai of the Gaim. The Chayti V'chavla the Suri, which are knotted and tied with ropes made of tsuri. Rashi says tsuri dekel, palm tree material, madichan. Just give them a nice wash, and they're okay. The tzavsa, made of a more absorbent gemi material, menagwan, that requires nigo. The kistna, made of linen, flax, miyashan, let it dry for 12 months. And once again, if there are knots, you have to untie them. Vi isbu kitri, sharlu, you have to untie them. Itma, we have learned, amaretz, who's known not to be careful with tuma. So whatever he touches is presumed to be tamei. Shoyshed yada lagas. He came into the wine press and couldn't resist, and he's tapping around. Now the gas is this pit, this pool, full of clumps, clusters of grapes with some juice swimming around. Now I only touched one or two bunches of grapes. Vinoga beshkodes. So what happens to the rest? Do we look at it all as one entity? Or do we differentiate? Well, this is one bunch, this is another cluster, this is another cluster. And only the one that he touched becomes tummy. We have a machlokes in Rebbe, Rabbi Chiya. Chad Amar, one says, Eshkol v'chosim v'vais of tmein, only the actual cluster that he touched and the juice surrounding it is tmein, presumed to be tummy. But the rest, the other clumps, the other clusters, v'chal agas kula tahir is okay. V'chad Amar, the other one disagrees. He says, kol agas kula nami tmein, the whole content of this gas is one thing, it's all tummy. Ask the Gemara. According to the first opinion, only the Eshkol and its immediate surrounding is Tamei. Eshkol v'chosiv v'ayis of Tamei. V'chol agas kulo tov, the rest is okay. Why is it different than a Mishnah we have in Maseches Taharis? In a similar case, a different result. Mishnah v'adisnan, why would this be any different than the Mishnah? She'eret shenim tzibir rechayim, you have this grinding equipment, this rechaim, this place where they would grind, they would actually take olives. We learned before that they would heat up the olives, boil them. They would boil them to soften them, and then they would put them into this grinder to crush them a bit, and then take them to the oil press to do a final crush. So you have a grinder filled with olives, and you find a sheretz, a dead creature, which is metame. Amongst the olives, sheretz shnimtzeh b'rechayim, eina mitamei, elamokim agoy. The only part that becomes tummy is the part that the sheret actually touched. The rest is separate and unaffected. However, v'mhayu, haya mashka mahalach, if there is juice swimming around throughout the entire, that's a connector, that's a conductor. I call it tummy, it's all tummy. So why would that be different than our case, where the Yama'aretz touched the cluster of grapes, since there is, you know, juice permeating the entire gas, it should conduct the tumah. It's all one thing. Well, says the Gemara, there's a big difference. Hasam le'mafsek v'le'midi. In your case of the olives, there's no barrier separating this piece from the other piece. So there's juice swimming around. It's all one big connector. It's one big concoction. Hacha mafsek yeshkoilas. Here you have clusters. You have this one that he touched. You have the one next to it, which is a separate entity. So although there's some juice swimming around, it doesn't really matter. Because, as Mefarshim explained, in reality the juice that's sitting on this cluster that he touched is really bottled to the cluster. It's not really considered juice. It's part of the fruit, so to speak. So technically only that cluster gets affected. And there's a chumrah that the wine around it as well, but that's it. Not past that point. The next cluster is a new entity. Hacha mafsaki eshkoilas. Okay, so how do we paskan halacha l'maisa? Eilu le'rabbanan, Rabbi Yirmiyah. The Chachamim ruled to Rabbi Yirmiyah, who encountered this type of situation. Va'amrila, some say to his son, the Vreid Rabbi Yirmiyah. K'divrei Omer, they followed the opinion of the Shita that says, Eshkol v'chol sivi vayis of Tmein, only the actual cluster with the immediate surrounding is Tami, v'chol agas kulatoy, and the rest of the gas is safe and sound, says the Mishnah. Okay, so until now we spoke about cleansing equipment with respect to Yayin Nesach concerns. Now, in the final, the last and final Mishnah of Al-Masechta, we're going to discuss a very common issue, kashering, all types of pots and pans and cutlery. They may have absorbed non-kosher residue, whether it's non-kosher food or milk and meat mixtures, etc. How do we go about cleansing those items? And we begin with a fellow who purchased something from a goy, which is presumed to be saturated with non-kosher residue. Halakech klei tashmish. He purchased a utensil, which is called klei tashmish, which means to say, it was used for food, right? It's a food-related piece of equipment. Minav dekachami baida from the goyim. How do we go about cleansing it and kashering it? Eshedarka lahatpul. Something which only needs to be immersed in a mikvah. Because as we're going to see soon, there are two separate issues when purchasing a kli from a goy. If it's a used kli, one requires to kosher it. He has to go extract any embedded residue. That's not kosher. But even if he purchased a brand new kli off the shelf in Walmart, there's a din of tvilas kelim. Right? The Ran brings from the Yerushalmi that the point is something which was used by a goy, or something which is considered food equipment owned by a guy, it must go through some sort of like a conversion process. He says, yeah, you have to be toivlet to release it from the tumah of the guy and be machnisai be kedushas Yisrael, so that it enters it, it gets elevated into the kedushas Yisrael, and now it's fit for you to use it at his meal. Beautiful Yerushalmi. So that's the second requirement. You have to kasher if there's any kasherous issues. But even if it's squeaky clean, never used, tvilas kelim is required too. So one is sort of like a sur mera, separated from the bad, or separated the bad from it. And then there's asei toiv, more the positive element, to incorporate it into a higher sphere of a Yiddish person's lifestyle. So that's the first thing, ashadarki lahatpil, something which was not used with hot. It wasn't a cooking utensil. It was a glass or something which is only used with cold. In this case, kashering is not required. Hagola is not required. The most you need to do is to be toivel it in a mikvah, to give it the additional level of purity of tahara. So in this case, yadful. That's all you do. Be toivel it in the mikvah and use it. Lahagla, however, something which was used with hot, like a pot or something. So that requires hagola. Hagala means to spit out, right? To be magal, to spit out any embedded residue. Yagil, you have to go about with Hagala. Laban bore something which requires libun, torching, because it was used over the fire, directly over the fire, so it absorbed the non-kosher element through the burning, you know, fiery process. So that's why you extract it, right? Because you extract it using the same method as was used to embed it. That's what's called kibayloi, the same method employed in absorption of the material, kach polta, that's the same way. You're going to get it to spit it out, to extract it, to expel the embedded residue. So if it was used directly over the fire, lab and bor, you have to employ the same system, burn it over the fire. For instance, hashvudva askala, you have a spit. Askala is a grill, used directly over the fire. Lab and bor, the only way to make them kosher is to torch them down directly over the fire. So we have three levels. An item used only with coal, make sure it's clean and put it in the mikvah. Used with hot, like a pot, like a stirring spoon, that requires hagalah, right? Dunk it into boiling water. If it was used directly over fire, direct fire is needed to make it kosher. And finally, we have something about a knife, hasakin. Although it was never used with hot, that's the case, right? So then, there's no need to make hagalah, but a knife, by its very nature, since it employs pressure and you know, pushing and it forces the flavor or whatever into the upper surfaces of the knife itself. It's not just a little rinse will do it. You have to actually scrape it, shuffle. You have to scrape it v'tahir, and then you can use it. Tana, we learned in a brisa. Aside from hagala and kashering, every kli purchased from a goy, which is a food-related kli, v'chulon tzrichan tefila barbaim sa. You have to table it in a mikvah, 40 sa, the standard mikvah. How do we know that's required? Amar Rava, Amar Kra, the pasuk speaks about the Bnei Yisrael who got the food utensils from the goyim, from the midyanim during their war. The pasuk says, kol davar sheyava be'esh, anything which is used over a fire, a pot, a pan, tavir be'esh. You have to actually run it through fire again. Okay, so again, the point is kibayloi, kach paltoi. So, like a spit, like a grill, has to be torched down with a torch. But then the pasuk adds a word, v'tahir. Now cleanse it. What does that mean? That's stage two. Hoisev l'cha hakasav tahar acharis. With this pasuk, Torah now adds another step in the process. Aside from removing the bad, non-kosher residue, you have to take it to a mikveh to be matir, to be mekadesh that equipment. Tani bar kapara. Bar kapara has a price with another source. The fact that this pasuk uses the word b'mei nida yischata. Now, b'mei nida is a term used in Parshas Chukas describing the paraduma waters. So I would think you have to sprinkle the paraduma on every fork that you get from the guy. Shemiania, perhaps I would surmise. Shatzara chazo, shlisha b'shvi, you have to sprinkle the paraduma water third and seventh day. Just like somebody became tummy through a maze. Tamalayma, no, ach. Ach b'mei nida. Ach. Minimizes it. Chalak, chilek. So no, we don't need that. So then why is the pasuk even say it? Why does the pasuk refer to menida? It's not referring to paraduma water, rather a mikvah. Mayim, the waters, shanida, that a woman who's in nida, tevel's ben, immerses in them. Havi oimer, we learn from here, boim sa. A standard 40s mikvah is required for tevilas kelim as well. Now why two sources for the halacha of tevilas kelim? Both are needed. Itzrich lemichtav. V'toyer, we need the word v'toyer. V'nitzrich l'mechta, we need that as well. Why? Ikos of Rachmana v'toyer. If only the word v'toyer, I mean, I would say v'toyer kodu. Immerse it in just a little puddle of water. You don't need a mikvah. Because Rachman may need it. That's why we need a nida to tell you. A full mikvah. Because Rachmana b'neidah, if the pasuk would only say b'neidah, Havamina would say, well, Herev Shemesh Kanida. Then you need the whole process, just like a nida. You need to immerse and wait for sunset, for nightfall, for the day to be over, for the purification process to be completed. Is that required? No. Because Rachmana v'tor la'alta. That's why Torah adds the word v'tor, to tell you that a nida needs Herev Shemesh, but not Tvilas Kel. As soon as you're tevil, you can use it right away. Omram Nachman, Omram Avua, Afilu Kelim Chadashim Emashma. The requirement to be tevil, a kli purchased from a goy, applies to even brand new, never before used kelim, which have no kashrus issues. How do I know? Because the pasuk is speaking about torching these kelim that have non-kosher material in them. And once you torch them, once you burn them out, you just renewed it. Even if you have a pre-used kli. And you applied libun, right? Put it on a, you torched it until it got red hot, right? And you totally burnt it and cleansed it. At this point, there's no longer any conscious concerns. It's like a brand new kli. And still the Torah says, tevel in the mikvah. Apparently, even a new kli needs that. But still, it needs to be immersed. Maskev Rav Sheshes, says Rav Sheshes, if you're saying that even a new kli needs, so then, if the point of the tefillah is unrelated to the iser coming out, so then even a wool shears nami that also needs to be tevilled. So you buy a car in the store, you have to tevil it. Amalei says no. Klei seuda amurim beparsha. If you take a look at the pasuk describing the kli of the goy that needs to be kasher and tevilled. It speaks about a kelim which I use with hot, called davash yavar be'esh. Says Rashi, typically that refers to food-related equipment, which I use for cooking and roasting and baking, as opposed to a car, which typically is not put on the fire. So therefore, it only applies to klei seuda, food-related equipment. Amar Nachman, Amar Avavua. Furthermore, lo yishonu. This tefillah is only a requirement. Ela b'lekuchen. Only on equipment purchased from a goy. So now it's been transferred to Jewish ownership. You have to be tevilled, as we explained before, to give it that status. Ukemasa shahaya, as per the story in the Midbar, where they took the equipment from the goyim for keeps. Avos shulin, but if you're merely borrowing, if you went to a hotel and you're drinking off their glasses, lie, that's okay, you don't have to be tevilled. Rav Yitzchak Yosef Zavan, he purchased mana de marda. This piece of equipment used to, it's like a shovel, used to remove the bread off the oven, and it was made of marda, of some cheap material, animal waste, earth, mud, whatever. And he figured he had to be tevil. I had to tevil it because it was purchased from Avid Kacham Magoy. So he figured he had to be tevil it. Amrle, Homer Rabbanus, the Chacham told him, Rav Yaakov Shmein, his name was Rav Yaakov, the Didim of Fashli. To me, it was explained. No. Klei matchos amurim beparsha. The parsha specifically refers to metal utensils. The pasuk lists gold, silver, copper, right? But your thing, your apparatus doesn't really qualify. Amar Vashi, what about glass? Hani klei zchuchus, these glass kelim, are they compared to metal? In a way. Since when they break and shatter, you can fix them up, you can remelt them and fix them up. In this way, they're similar to the metal kelim, and therefore we treat them accordingly, and they have to be tevilled midrabon. What about kunya? Kunya is a clay cheres, a clay a dish, which is coated with metal. With lead. So the question is, do we treat it as a clay cheres, no tevila required, or as a metal clay, since the actual surface is metal? There's a machlekes, pligiba, between Rav Ach and Rav Yehuda, once it's ketilasa, you look at the initial clay, which is cheres, no tefillah required. V'chalamar kesayif. One says, look at the final product. The actual surface is metal. And you need to be toilet. V'lachasan, the alachas kesayif, we look at it as metal. Yiboylo, now comes a new shayla. Mashkanta mai. What if he didn't borrow from the guy? He didn't purchase either. It was a collateral. He lent the guy money. He gave him a pot as a collateral. So the lender, the Jewish lender, has to look after it, but it's not really his. If he uses it, does he need to be toiled? Omar Mar Barvashi. I'll tell you a story with my own father, Ravashi. Abba, my father, Mashklev Gechom Kasa the Kaspa. This guy gave him a silver goblet as a mashkin. Va'atfulev Yishtebe, and he toiled it before he drank with it. Well, I'm not sure why. Is it because he holds that a mashkanta is like a sale? Because, you know, for the time being, the lender is sort of the owner. And therefore, before use, you have to title it. Or perhaps, typically you don't say that, except here, because my father got the feeling that the guy is not coming back to redeem it. The chazi, he realized that this guy, the dati lishkuyei, who plans on just leaving it by him, in which case he's really like the owner, and therefore he must tovel before use. Tana Rabbanan, halakeach klei tashmish, one purchases food utensils from the goyim, minayit gechavim. So again, it depends what it is. Dvorim shlein ishtamish ben, things which he never used, brand new, then only step two is required, tvila matbilan vein turn, they're okay. However, dvarim shenishtamish ben aydeit tzaynin, things which he had used with cold, kagoyin koises, v'katoynis, tzachiyis, glasses, containers, bowls, madichon, umadbilon, a proper rinse is required to make sure there's nothing sticking there, and umadbilon, you immerse in the mikveh tayr and you can use it. Next level is dvarim shenishtamish ben adeicham, pots, pans, things that we used with heat, kagoyin ayoyres, Hakum kumusin, machamin, all types of pots, magilon, matbilon, and turn. In this case, you have to do hag'ola, put it into boiling water, and then be toivel, and you can use it. Fourth level is things used directly on dry heat and dry fire. Dvarim shenishtamish ben dayur, going hashfudin, vatskalois, pits, grills, malabnon. The highest level of extraction is required by torching. Direct fire requires direct fire. Matbilon, and then you do tefillah and turn, you can use them. Now suppose he took a non-kosher pot and used it. V'chulon shenishtamash ben. Ad shalo yad. V'shalo yagel. V'shalo yilavin. He didn't do tefillah. He didn't do hagol. He didn't do... What happens to the food that you cooked in that non-kosher pot? Tani chada asr. V'tani dechmuta. So one brisa says that it's asr. Okay, so the food that was cooked in this non-kosher pot is asr. And by the way, Tosis points out that this wouldn't apply. You know, the first case was that he used it before tefillah, which means to say it was something originally only used with cold and that it required more than a tefillah. In this case, Tosis says certainly all would agree that if it was used before tefillah, it's not going to affect the content. Tefillah is a chiyuv, it's a mitzvah, but the evidence was used, the food in this kli is not going to be affected. So the focal point here is on the other ones, the pots, pans, you know, things that were actually assumed to have absorbed non-kosher material within them. Then he goes and turns around and uses them without addressing the kashrus concerns. According to one shita, it's asur. Tanya idach mudah, the other shita says, but the evidence if you use it after the fact, it's okay. How do we explain this machlekes? But just looking at Tosfos again, he says that if you miss the tefillah and you use it, it shouldn't really affect the content. But then he says, Mihu, he says, perhaps you could say that it would be usher because otherwise he might go ahead and use real non-kosher pots as well. So perhaps even just lacking a tefillah would be an issue. Okay, in any case, we paskin, by the way, that... although one is meant to be tovel, you know, new pots, but the evidence, if it was used, it's not going to affect the content. So how do we explain this machlekes? Tani chada osur, food is osur. V'tani idach other shita says muta. How do you explain this? L'kasha, here goes the answer. How come on the onus and tam of gam osur? Let's realize that any flavor embedded in the wall of this kli, of this used pot, is spoiled, is stale. Right? Although it's nice and tam, it's going to impart flavor, it's going to contribute to the new dish you're cooking today, but it's going to be lefgam, to its detriment. It's going to have a negative effect. Hokum adamar is namgam osr. The old is namgam is osr. So we ignore the fact that it's stale and spoiled. The fact is, it's tam of isr. So, but the ever the food is osr. Ha! The other opinion holds. Kamanda Omar, there is namgam muta. Other shit is following the shit that says negative taste, bad flavor is mutter. And therefore, the food in this pot is safe, is kosher. And in a minute, the Gemara is going to ask, so then why even bother kashering? We'll get to that in a minute. Asks the Gemara, Ulamanda Omar. If you say that the bad flavor doesn't affect the food, question is, so why then did the Torah instruct us to kasha those pots taken from the Midianim back in the Midbar? What's the problem? What's the problem? Why kasher it? Omar Rav Chiya Breda Rav Huna, you're right. Lo Asra Torah El Gdei Rav Asyema. When the Torah forbade using that equipment before kasher, we're speaking about pots that we used same day, fresh flavor in them. Nothing stale about it. It's love. Noisen tam lefgam. It's noisen tam lefgam. But if it's already a day old, it's ready the next day. According to some Rishayim, 24 hours later. According to Rashi, overnight. Whatever it is, it's been staled and soured and spoiled. Then it'll be okay. But in this case, it was fresh. To love. Noisen tam lefgam. Ask the Gemara the obvious question. Mikan ve'elach lishteri. Okay, so you have a pot. Last time used a week ago. Go use it without kashering. You're right. We're not Torah yet. With the Rabbanon, we don't allow it because it can cause confusion. Now it's a week old. Next time you might use a day old pot. Gezera is a concern of Kedera She'ene Vasyem. If you allow him to use an old pot, Mishum, it might come to use Gezera Vasyem, a pot which was used today. But in theory, Nois Nam of Gam is Mutar. And therefore, after the fact that the pot was used, the food is kosher. Now, the other opinion holds no. That Nois Tam of Gam is also. Vidoch, the other sheet holds, Kedera Basyema Nami. Even if you insist that in the midbar, the pots were fresh pots, even if it was used that day, even there, Mifgam Pogma. You have to agree that the flavor in the wall is somewhat tainted. When the flavor goes into the wall and comes back out, you know, the wall material certainly, adversely impacts the flavor in there. Right? So it got nifgam through the wall of the kli. And when it comes back out, it certainly has a certain degree of pagam to it. And still we see the Torah says it's us. Apparently this nifgam is us. Okay, so brief recap. We discussed the method of cleaning the wine press equipment, water and afer, and water, all different sequences and opinions. We have the Brisa discussing various pieces of equipment and how to kasha them depending on their makeup, a rinse, a nigov. In some cases, you have to wait 12 months. We discussed the Amor to touch the cluster of grapes. How far does the tuma travel? And we discussed the kalim purchased from a goy. So first thing is the hagala requirement, the kasher requirement. It was only used with cold, no issue. With hot, you have to do hagala directly on the fire, dry heat. You have to extract it likewise with dry heat. And this was in addition to the chiv tvila. For any clay su'uda, any food utensil purchased from a goy. And there are three conditions there. It has to be purchased, it has to be clay su'uda, and it's specific to clay mateches and glass as well, midrabbanan. All the best to you and atzlacha.